Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's happening, guys? Welcome to another edition of the Gagan Pod here on Optus Sport. Unfortunately, we're without Mark Schwarzer. Who knows where he is? He's gone walkabout apparently in Scotland somewhere, but that's fine because we have an all-star duo, Michael Bridges and Tommy Sorensen. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me. Tommy, good morning to you. Massive news overnight, and I think I didn't want to go straight in on Bridgie with it, but Nuno Espirito Santo has been sacked after just 4 months in the job. What do you make of this?
I don't think it's any surprise. I think, you know, looking back at the summer, he was seventh choice, you know, and he was never going to be given the time and obviously not the budget as well to do a rebuild like he wanted it to. And again, I think three games, three wins, but then I think it started to show with all the Harry Kane palaver that went on. I don't think everyone was on board. And again, it's just been coming over the last 3 or 4 weeks with the results, the way they played and obviously culminated against Man U with the fans finally, you know, turning on him. And again, the performance, I think, it was the end of his reign for sure. And when you heard that there was meetings going on Sunday night, you knew Monday would be would be changeover day.
It just feels so harsh, and it feels like this must be a dark day for Tottenham fans because, yes, maybe Nuno wasn't the right fit for the job, but it just feels like he was set up to fail from the first day, right?
It certainly does, and I'm absolutely devastated for a few reasons. For managers and coaches around the world that aspire to be managers and coaches around the world, when you see things happening like this after such a quick and short period, I give him the benefit. I was delighted that he was given the opportunity. I wasn't too badly disgruntled when he got the job because I sort of thought, like Tommy, there might have been a bit of a rebuild, a bit of a restructure, and he was used to that. And what we may have seen happen in January because of his contacts and what he did at Wolves when he got a lot of signings in with his connections with George Mendes, I think it is. So he hasn't been given that opportunity 10 games in, and the only people that are laughing now is the bank balance that he will be getting, because it doesn't. You seem to get paid more money when you actually fail, like we've seen with Sam Allardyce over the years. We've just seen it with Steve Bruce getting paid out a lot of money, and with Nuno as well. And the other people that are laughing are Gunners fans, because if you'd have gone back to 3 games in, we're top of the league, they're bottom of the league. I'm sending all my mates messages going, there you go, how funny is this? Relegation battle, and Arteta has got a full squad at his disposal. He's got them back singing off the same hymn sheet. Nuno Espirito Santo, the team, I mean, no shots on target. I think what's quite ironic, we talked about during the week, loads, is that stat. The last time Tottenham Hotspur had no shots on target was under Villas Boas back in 2013-14. And I think not long after, or it might have been after that game, he got the sack as well.
Yeah, it was his final game.
So there you go. Any manager that's getting no shots on target, I'll tell you what, I'll be worried about Rafa Benitez at this moment in time against Wolves, because they're playing and they've got no shots on target and they're 2 down.
Exactly right, Bridgie. Wolves, Everton are playing at the moment. Of course, the hours changing over there in Europe means we've started the podcast at about half time, but Everton really weren't in it in the first half. It's 2-0 Wolves at the moment. Hwang Hee-chan had a disallowed goal as well. And Rafa Benitez has been linked to that Newcastle job. Tommy, is there trouble going on at Everton at the moment?
It was a tough from the start, obviously, with Benitez's Liverpool ties. I think they've been hit with injuries. I think the Corey in midfield, losing him, I think was a massive. I think he was their driving force early in the season when they were on top. And then Calvert-Lewin is still on the sidelines. So I think they are hit a little bit. But yeah, it reminds me a little bit of what happened last season. Again, they started on fire and then slowly just disintegrated. And at the moment, there's not, you know, a lot to be positive about, really. You know, they're well structured, but again, they still seem vulnerable at the back, and we've seen that today as well. You know, not really posing a threat but leaking goals, and you know, that spells disaster right there.
Live update: Benitez's job is safe. He's got a shot on target. We're good.
Well, Bridgie, I mean, Wolves, you look at what a 24 hours it's been. Nuno Espirito Santo is sacked from Spurs. And in the meantime, Wolves, with this result, it looks as though they're going to win this game. And they'll be sitting just 1 point behind Man United in fifth spot. Pretty good turnaround for a club like them. We thought once Nuno left and you know, the Jimenez injury, he's back, scored today. It's looking good for Wolves.
And do you know what it is? This could have been so different if they'd have listened to the fans and the media early on with the new manager, because it didn't start very well. Yeah. Struggling to score goals, leaking goals. But when I look at teams that are in trouble, I try to put a bit of a coach's head on myself, and I look and think, if that was me in that situation, am I in trouble? Are the players buying into what I'm bringing? And you could see Wolves were trying things. And that game by game, they were starting to get an understanding, and you could see patterns of play developing with and without the ball. And unfortunately for Spurs, that hasn't happened. And I think that's where it's been. The players and the fans haven't seen anything happening with Nuno, and I think that's why it has cost him his job. Whereas Wolves, the board and the directors and everybody involved must have looked at that and thought, you know what it is? We can see a little bit of something happening. There's a bit of momentum. And if you're given time and you're given enough opportunities to prove yourself, that's what's happened. But I'm still absolutely devastated for Nuno Espirito Santo. That's a Tottenham fan saying how horrible it has been and watching it. Yes, it hasn't been pretty. But I just feel for managing coaches and another Aussie guy that's gone through this situation that I feel for, that had an unbelievable football career, Harry Kewell. It's happened to Harry a few times. Six games at Oldham Athletic. So people are changing their lifestyles, their livelihoods to go and manage teams, and it's not working out for them. For me, the people that should have been sacked is some of the players at Tottenham Hotspur, because three managers haven't been able to sort it out. And some of them should be on bloody notice. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, you can't help but feel like Harry Kane has doomed his own manager here since he's come back into the squad. Tottenham haven't been able to get back to those winning ways. But Tommy, I want to talk about Tottenham, because they came up against Man United, and we focus on the negativity of Tottenham, but maybe it was a revival of Man United which ended up getting him sacked. Ole switched to the back five. A lot of people were saying he was going to get replaced by Antonio Conte, and then coincidentally he's played a very Conte-esque style, but he's completely battered Tottenham away from home. Quickly looking at the positives of it, though, is that a turning point for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
You know, again, I think it's a short-term fix. I think he did the right thing. You know, obviously shoring up that back line with an extra centre-half, you know, just being a little bit more solid. And then they know with the pace and the creativity they got up front, you know, they can expose teams. Is it a long-term fix? I still doubt it. You know, where, you know, you got players, Rashford, where does he fit in? You know, you got players on the bench there that, you know, Sancho, you know, Greenwood, you know, do they fit in this system? Because you need two holding midfielders. You need Ronaldo in there, I presume. You know, and then if you're going to play with two strikers, does that suit the other players? I think there's some questions long term. But again, I think he did the right thing, especially after being exposed against Liverpool. And it worked in this game. I think they looked very solid. They looked sharp. And obviously Ronaldo, that pass to Cavani, I think, was out of this world. And obviously his goal as well. So you see his worth. And again, against, like Bridgie said, you know, a very, very bad Tottenham team that again, didn't manage a shot on target. So easy prey, I think. But Solskjaer still got a job on his hands.
That's the best comment I've heard, Tommy. Easy prey. That's what it was. If there's any team that Man United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer needed to play in a vulnerable situation, I would have gone for Tottenham as well.
Incredible to think that. But Bridgie, now, Antonio Conte last week was heavily linked to Man United. Now he's in London. The word is that he's very close to agreeing a 2-year deal to begin with Tottenham Hotspur. We've seen this before with Tottenham. I remember when Pochettino was sacked, how quick Jose Mourinho came in. It just felt uneasy about, it felt as though that deal was done in the background while Poch was managing. Has the same thing happened here? Did he already have the knife in his back before this game against Man United?
I've been in the game a long time, Claude. I know how contracts work. I know how long it took to sort my own contract out. And I was just, you know, when I went from Sunderland to Leeds, that was a decent week of negotiations, and that was at the top end of the table. I've been in the lower divisions signing for Carlisle United. It still didn't take It wasn't as quick as what you would think it would happen. This has been grumbling. They've definitely been in contact with me. There's no doubt about it, because the minute he was sacked, I remember looking on my Twitter feed, the minute he was sacked, I was scrolling down, and then it was like, and Conte has agreed terms or is close to agreeing terms. I'm thinking, mate, that does not happen. That is just too uneasy. So I know that the clubs that are set up really, really well, I know Man City do it very, very well because of the City group, that you know you've only got a manager for a certain period of time. And if you've got a club vision and a philosophy and a style of play like them, and I'll tell you what else, Brighton are very, very well structured like this as well. They look for managers that can fit into your style. They don't want a whole holistic approach to come on board and somebody to completely change the DNA of what you've built up, because that can set you back and it can change, but it needs time. And Man City will have a list of managers after Pep, because he's not going to be there forever, that they feel can still come in and fit that mould and what they're all about. Tottenham, I don't think do. It was desperation, and I think other clubs will have a short list of managers they would like. Tottenham have just gone, who's available? Right, we'll give him a ring because this guy's getting sacked in a few days' time. So I think they've approached him knowing that Newcastle are after him, no, Manchester United are after him, and thought, let's go in. And what I think Conte will do, and I said it to you about Newcastle United, he will kick some backsides in there. He will not hold back. If it's somebody going to come in to rattle that bunch of players that I think have been pampered for a long, long time, and are missing, it's almost like a childish kid sulking after they've lost Pochettino. And Mourinho couldn't sort it out. Now they've come in with Nuno Espirito Santo, who's not a shout and a baller. I don't think he got himself in with the players, but Conte, I think, will come in and absolutely rattle them. And I was either hoping it would be him or Simeone, because I think a few of them need a good hiding.
Yeah, he's that type of manager.
Let's be honest. If they can get Conte now, you know, for a team like Tottenham, who's where they are at the moment. No, you're getting a manager who's won titles with Juve, Chelsea, Inter.
Pedigree.
A world-class manager.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why he's there is Paratici, who's come in as a sporting director who had links and worked with him at Juve, six, 7 years ago. I think he's been a big driving force behind the scenes because he wasn't in the summer when there was contact with Conte. And I think he's the one who's been driving it, I think, behind the scenes to over the line.
He's the one that made the phone call at halftime in the last match against Manchester United.
Yeah, and he was on the flight straight away. It seemed like with 10 minutes to go, he was on the flight from Italy, I think.
To take over for the last 10 minutes. It's embarrassing. It's unbelievable the way it works. It's, yeah. But listen, that's the reality of it. So it's... like I say, it doesn't give managers a lot of hope and a lot of faith when they want to aspire to get to the top. But when you're getting that kind of money, you get paid the big bucks, you're going to get made to make the big decisions and your head's on the chopping block.
Yeah, he's brought a bit of pedigree, and there's no doubt I think we'll see that famous Antonio Conte back five as well. And it'll be interesting to see who stays and who goes. Harry Kane is the biggest name that everyone's talking about. And I wanted to quickly I don't want to rub salt in the wounds and keep going on Spurs fans. I know I'm conscious of you, Bridgie, as well. It's a Tuesday. I don't want to go too hard on you, but
Bring it on.
But I saw a post the other day come up by Sport Bible, and it was talking about the three best strikers in the world. And it was saying, who would you take right now? Lewandowski, Benzema, and Kane.
I was getting worried there because I was just about to tell you I'm retired.
Wow. Carry on. Don't flatter yourself, please.
Sorry, mate. Carry on. I got carried away there.
But the Lewandowski, Benzema, and Kane. And it got me thinking about it. And I just think, I know how you English are with your players. I don't think Kane is, and I don't think he's ever quite been on that highest echelon of world-class strikers. I think he sits just in that bucket underneath. I would put Kane with the Edin Dzekos, with the Ciro Immobiles of the world. I wouldn't put him in with the Suarez, Lewandowski.
Stop it. You go and have a look at his Premier League goal-scoring record over the years from the age that he's come through, right? And you tell me he's not world-class, okay? If you've given me them three players, and out of them three players at this moment in time, I am taking Lewandowski, then I'm taking Benzema, and then I'm taking Harry Kane. If you asked me 2 seasons ago when he was getting 30-plus goals in the back 2 seasons, I'm taking Harry Kane, then Lewandowski, then Benzema. But at this moment in time, he's definitely up. He was up there before this season kicked off because he's done it in the World Cup. He's done it in the Euros.
Well, has he though? Like in the Euros?
You tell me what Lewandowski's done the last World Cup and the last Euros.
Yeah, I will say Lewandowski's been probably, but I look at a player. If you ask any, I watch a lot of Italian Serie A. You ask any Italian about Ciro Immobile, right? He's the starting striker for the national team. And I think most Italians will say he's probably the weakest player in the national team. No offense to him. He's won a European Golden Boot as well, something Kane hasn't done.
You can't say that about Harry Kane for international duties because he delivers. Lewandowski doesn't. Immobile doesn't.
He was heavily criticised these Euros. He was heavily criticised because, yes, he was dropping deep, but he wasn't doing what he was there to do, which was score goals. He didn't get them out of the group. He didn't get them to where they got.
So look what's happened at the end of this season, going into the Euros and then start of this season. His head's been in a spin because he's had Manchester City knocking on his doorstep. I think he used his brother as his agent. He has not mentally dealt with that. He hasn't coped with it. Prior to that, this guy was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Benzema wasn't playing international football. Lewandowski wasn't performing at international football. Harry Kane was doing both. And I would say at this moment in time, his head's all over the place. He looks out of shape. So I agree with you. At this moment in time, he's not. But before that, I'm going to back Harry all the way. And I'm a big fan of his and I'm his biggest critic. He's nowhere near at this moment in time.
Tommy, the way he's going at the end of his career, will he go down as that top world-class bucket of strikers?
No, I think he's still got the potential to do that for sure. And like Bridgie said, his record is there. So it's not like it's not something we can ignore. But we have to take in the situation he's in now. And we as players, I've been in situations. You know, if your head is not in it, if your heart is not in it, you know, you can't perform at the highest level. And he's certainly not doing that right now. So, but again, it wouldn't be fair to then judge him on the now, you know, and then sort of disregard his career and what he can potentially do going forward. I think with a new manager could be a lifeline for him, a kick up the arse, maybe a change of style, or he'll have to be moved on in January. I think Tottenham missed the trick with Man City's interest. They should have sold him. They should have got the money that they could, so I think there's mistakes being made higher up with Levy and the way he runs the club. And, you know, as a player, it just seems like he's not there. He's not mentally there and it's affected the team as well. And it's left Nuno as well in a horrible situation since the start of the season. So, you know, I don't want to judge. I still think he's a world-class striker. And if he does go on or if he, you know, if Conte gets him in shape, he'll keep showing that as well. So I agree a little bit with Bridgie there.
My last little bit, I've got to say, the mental drain that is on him at the moment. When you get them demons and you get the doubt, like I say, it feels like you're carrying extra 10 kilos on your back and you can't perform like that. And that's why I do feel for him, because he's been let down by a guy that has mentored him for several years, and that's Daniel Levy. They had an agreement. It wasn't in his contract. That's naivety. So, but when you look at his, and the thing Harry's been let down with as well is injuries. He has had a lot of injuries that has cost him a lot of matches where he could have scored goals. Thankfully, Son stepped up. So Harry's had the niggles, but you cannot say 167 goals in 250 games for his club. And then when you look at his international record, 41 in 60 appearances, like it is world-class. And he's a very, very all-round pedigree player when he's focused and when he's got his mindset. But again, he's going through the motions. And I really feel for him. I do. But I still put him in that category, Claude. I'm sorry, mate, with them players.
No, it's good. I mean, look, I think he knows that he needs trophies. If at the end of his career, he's going to be considered one of the best players, one of the best strikers to ever do it, he needs trophies. So and he knows that.
Do you know one of my mates, Alan Shearer, his biggest thing, he's a Newcastle legend. His trophy cabinet is empty. When he left Blackburn Rovers after winning that Premier League and he went to Newcastle, a big talk Man United and Ferguson wanted him. And I still think to this day, I know Alan will say that his biggest regret, possibly, even though he's got a statue outside St. James's Park, I think he would have preferred to go there to Manchester United to have a look back and see what he'd done.
Wow. Yeah, I know. That's what they remember at the end of the day. But anyways, gents, I want to move on now to some of the biggest stories of the weekend. We're going to go with some highs and lows and some talking points that came out of those games. Just a quick update as well. Everton have pulled one back. Alex Iwobi scored, so I'll keep you guys posted on that one. Maybe we did speak a little too soon. But looking at some of the highs from the weekend, Chelsea, a comfortable win against Newcastle, 3-0. And the latest rumour is that Unai Emery could be the man to now come in at Newcastle. He's the newest name to be tossed up. But Tommy, who is the man to take Newcastle to the next level? Bridges said that they're going to wait until the international break to replace. What did you make of that game? Was that Chelsea too good or Newcastle potentially at threat of relegation here?
I think it was a clinical, again, what we say in week in and week out with Chelsea. I think they were, they're totally outclassed Newcastle. I think the possession was 80-20, and it didn't really offer a lot of threat, really, Newcastle. And Chelsea just so well drilled. Yes, we can talk about Lukaku being out, missing a striker, but just the system, the intensity, the tactical prowess that they have and that Tuchel have got them in. It's just whoever they put in. We've seen it over the last couple of weeks with the wingbacks. You know, they've changed both wingbacks and Chilwell and Reece James. Reece James, yeah, just on fire. And they've become, so important for that team. And that is a great support for the front line. They're on fire. And I think Newcastle, it's a big job there, because I don't think they have the players. Not a lot of time, even though January, we can say they can spend. They first need to get the manager right. And then get a couple of players. They can get them over the line for this season. And then, obviously, it's going to be a long-term build. But short-term, there's worries for sure because they haven't showed a lot. And again, Bridgie, you played there. You're a fan there. It must be worrying short-term.
Yeah, of course it's worrying short-term. I mean, the biggest thing for me was to make sure that we're safe for January, because going into January, making a lot of wholesale changes with new signings coming in doesn't guarantee you instant success. So if you're in that relegation battle and you're adrift by January, there's a lot of players are going to think, hang on a minute, if I sign for Newcastle, I could be in the Championship. There's managers going, this could be very, very dangerous. So, the person that comes in now has got a mammoth task dealing with these players. And I looked at the bench at the weekend. I thought, haven't seen Fabian Shaw, one of the player that I think should be playing that back line for Newcastle, should have been in there. The other guy, Almiron, the one that's got the pace, and Joe Willett, they were on the bench. And I just thought that the Newcastle bench looked a lot stronger. And then some of the actual players that were in the starting lineup. So that was a strange one for me. And then I looked at Chelsea's bench and I'm going, hang on a minute. He's rested Aspilicueta. James gets two goals. Alonso, who was in my fantasy league team a few months ago, Chilwell comes in. He scored a goal in every other game apart from the Newcastle. The squad depth is just absolutely laughable when you see it. And no wonder there's such a big gap when you can rotate like Chelsea can. And I still stand by it, Klotz. Still think they're going to do the treble in some manner. And I really feel for Newcastle. So whoever comes in has got a monster task, but they've got to make sure that they are safe by January. Otherwise, they won't be able to attract the players. They'll just be able to do loan deals because nobody will sign knowing that they've got to take a wage cut to go into the Championship.
Would Unai Emery be a good fit?
I'm looking forward to seeing him back because I love Darren Farsi, the comedian that takes off all the managers. And I've really missed seeing him do Unai Emery when he goes, "Deed!" I just absolutely love him. So listen, if it's Unai Emery, the guy that I would say off Sesame Street looks like the Count, remember the Count? Yeah. 100. I'm looking forward to seeing him back. And again, like Tommy says about managers, when you have a winning formula, which he does. He's proven that I think the Europa League is basically his. It's got his name written all over it. And he did have a better record to Arteta after the amount of games when he was gone. So yeah, that fits. That seems like a really reasonable option. It's not a crazy option. It's actually doable and it makes sense.
And he's the king of the Europa League as well.
And you're getting a manager in that sort of, I would say just below the top, even though he's, as you say, he's won, but he's probably not regarded as the top five manager in the world, but he's still
he's not a Champions League manager, is he? He's that second tier.
But you're getting one with huge amount of experience who's been able as well to work with a sort of a cut down budget short term and seems to have a good philosophy that gets results. Yeah. So I think at least, to get them started, I think he'll be a great manager.
And I think it was Graham Jones that I said to you, Claude, has been given the opportunity to take the team until that final. I think the next game is Brighton.
Yep.
And the one they're really looking to make a stamp on is that home game against Brentford that they feel is winnable, and it will do a massive lift for the manager that comes in that period. They don't want the manager coming into a defeat early on, and that'll give them an international window to look after Newcastle United, get on the training park, and work with that team for that two-week window, obviously, because there's not that many will go away for the international break, and get some kind of structure and organisation. And then even Graham Jones afterwards, his job after the game, he said, we need somebody in ASAP. And, you know, he's an honest guy. He knows where he stands at Newcastle United. And I really respect what he did, because he could have said, oh, I'm going to go for the next game. But he acknowledged the fact that he needs help, because he respects Newcastle United where they need to be.
Quick one for you, Bridgie. Reece James, they did manage to hold Chelsea up 65 minutes, but then Reece James scored two goals, and there's this debate going on social media. It always sparks up every time one of these two players have a blinding performance. It's Reece James or Trent Alexander-Arnold. I wanted to ask both of you. I'll start with you, Bridgie. You're picking a team at the moment. You can only take one of these two right backs. Who are you taking?
Trent Alexander.
Okay. Didn't even have to think about it. Tom?
More consistent over a duration. I love Reece James. It's a lovely problem to have. Don't get me wrong. I think James is probably a better defender. Mm-hmm. But Trent's passing ability, his range, but I just think he's special. And when Southgate tried him in the midfield, I thought it was a joke, because on that wide area, when you whip the balls in, I don't think, for me personally, I haven't seen anybody deliver a ball as good as David Beckham, as Trent does.
Mm. Tom?
You know, I think Reece James has taken a huge step this season. I think, you know, to add the goals to his game, I love the power, as you say, defensively. He looks strong. And, you know, I think it's neck and neck there. I think probably at the moment, I think Reece James probably got the foot in front. But, you know, again, it's a tough choice, and it's a great choice.
Isn't it a lovely problem to have?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great choice, and we could add a few more there, I think, on that right-hand side as well. Kyle Walker, there's others.
Trippier, that's probably
the strongest.
The one I wouldn't be throwing in there, the one I'm not putting in there, I'm pleased you didn't ask, but I'm going to throw him in there. I think Wan-Bissaka, he's looked absolutely honking this season. The best clips of him this season was when he's been trying to dive in and make tackles, and he slides off the field into the fans. He's mental.
Yeah, but again, I think he's been exposed, and I think we saw against Liverpool, his judgment of when to press, I think, was wrong. But we don't know what he's been told by behind the scenes. But I definitely agree. He's not in the same class as the two others, or three others we've discussed, for sure.
Well, while we are picking England teams, I'm going to go to another game from the weekend. It was the first one we played, Leicester at home to Arsenal. Arsenal win 2-0. I wouldn't say comfortable. Leicester dominated proceedings once they were 2-0 down, but Arsenal dug their heels in, won the game. It's a tough place to go, the King Power. And Tommy, I wanted to talk to you about Aaron Ramsdale, because this guy has, there were so many question marks around him when he was signed. He's come in, he's changed that team, along with Gabriel and Thomas Partey, definitely. But I wanted to talk to you about that. England at the moment, if you're selecting a team, is he the best English keeper that we have in that league?
Definitely on form, I think he is. I know to a position of goalkeeper, there's a lot that goes into it. And again, look at the Euros. I think that there was question marks, you know, with Pickford. I think he had a good Euros, actually. Probably bar a bit of shakiness in the semi-final. I think he was pretty strong, made some good saves. So I think that counts for something going forward. Mm. But definitely, you know, you're looking at Ramsdale pushing him now, and especially with Everton's form sort of drifting off, I think, and Arsenal on the ascend, It's going to help Ramsdale down the line. He just needs to wait for his chances, you know. And when they come, he just needs to get in there and prove that the form he's in right now, that he can sort of translate that to the international level as well. But looking at the weekend, I think it masks Arsenal performance a little bit that he docked them out. Like late in the game, he had four or five saves. Yes, everyone talks about the free kick. Fantastic save, but he had a few others as well, and it could have been a different scoreline. I think Leicester will be kicking themselves that they didn't wake up early on. And tactically, I think Arteta did well. I think he actually exposed him a little bit by, you know, the way he set it up with, you know, the two wide at the top. And then, you know, they got, you know, just, yeah, they just outmaneuvered the Leicester midfield. And again, scored from a set piece as well. So, but it's still Arsenal. I still got my doubts about them. You know, they're still
come on. Still they've got nine in a row, man. He's good.
Yes, I agree.
He got the manager of the month award. He's kicked on.
Yeah, no, they've done well. I'm so surprised that they've turned it around. And fair play to Arteta. But you know, there's still things there to improve on for sure. And I think Leicester was disappointed to lose that game.
Tommy, I've got a couple of questions for you because I know you know these guys. They're from your country. Peter Schmeichel, his son's at the other end of the field in goal for Leicester. Peter Schmeichel puts a tweet out, "That's one of the greatest saves I have ever seen in years." How would that have gone down between the Schmeichels over the dinner table? His son would have been fuming, surely.
You know what, Bridget, you know, game recognizes game. So I think Casper would have applauded it as well.
Fair enough.
Yeah, not yeah. So you know, we you know, even though we want to win, we you know, I'm sure when you see, you know, a couple of Shearer's goals, you can sit there and say, yeah, actually, I scored some great ones, but he's also up there. So
well, the second question I've got for you. I thought it was brilliant, Ramsdale. So he was getting a lot of stick from the Leicester fans. And instead of letting it get to him, he actually embraced it. So for the listeners, and you get a chance to go on the Optus Sport app, I think there's a few things on the Twitter feed where you'll see Aaron Ramsdale about to take a goal kick. And what you get from the away fans, they sing, they go, whoa. And just before you kick the ball, they tell you how bad a player you are by saying, "You're bleep." Ah, and what I love is when he kicked the ball, he turned around and he gave a fist pump to the fans going, ah, and he was encouraging it and he embraced it. Obviously, what do you make of that? And did you ever have any antics like that or did you just shut off?
No, I think it's a great way of dealing with it. And it's a bit of banter. I think, it's part of what the fans probably want as well. You want to see emotions. You want to see a bit of back
reality
and forth. I used to get it, obviously, every time, especially at Newcastle. I think every time I was up there, even when I went to Villa, I used to get abused. And again, you know, why not? Why not go along with it? Like, there's no point, you know, making it into a problem. And yeah, you go around and you applaud them after the game. You go down and you make an effort just to applaud them, you know, just to give them a little bit back. And, you know, good on him. I think, and again, you know, he would have been laughing inside. You know, obviously he knew he would be played a big part in that win. You know, then you stick it to them as well. Yeah. You know, you go back and
the other good one,
the
best
feeling.
Tell me the other good one they give him. They were telling him how he'll never be England's number one. And I just thought it was a really good comeback. So they really tried to smash him and he just embraced it. And I thought, yeah, we saw a human side of him and I really enjoyed that. So yeah, good on him.
It was a top save. Tommy, what's your best ever save?
My best ever save?
Do you remember?
There's that many to pick from. How can you do that?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, I was trying to look at sort of best saves ever, and obviously I had to take all mine away there. And
I saw you make a few good ones in training against Kevin Phillips when they're going to the top corner and the big Danish arm came out and went, "Have that, Kev."
Yeah, no, there's different ways to judge it. And you can make a great save in a game where it's not important, and then you can make a save in a game that obviously wins you the game or at a crucial point. Yeah. So it's difficult to rank, but obviously own post of view, that penalty save I made with Sunderland, Bridgie was there with Alan Shearer. At a crucial time where we had to win in a local derby. You know, those things are, it might not be technically the greatest save, but it's probably the most important save, I ever made, early in my career in England. So, you know, and that's, you know, set me up for the time forward. And back in the day, you know, we got to look at, social media, you know, if you make good or bad things today, you know, obviously Ramsdale, as soon as he made that save, Schmeichel tweets it, it flies around the world and it gives him a lot of credit. And it works both ways nowadays. You know, we didn't have it back there. It was obviously just match of the day and that was it. You know, so it has changed. No, it has changed a lot, you know, good and bad. I think today, if you make a mistake, you know, again, we saw with Karius in the Champions League final, you know, how he was exposed and how he was, you know, it was sent around people in America who had never heard of soccer, of football, you know, that were suddenly, you know, talking about Karius and and everyone knew his name. So, you know, but Ramsdale, you know, he'll get a lot from this. You know, my saves were close to his save, but I thought it was top class. I don't think I've made a save like that.
I wouldn't say yourself short. I think we'll get up to sport to look out. We'll get up to sport to make a little highlights package. What do you reckon, Bridget? We'll get the black and white footage out of Tommy Sorensen back in the day.
Oh, well, if you're getting black and white footage of Tommy, I'll no doubt be on there, mate. You look at these young kids, Tommy.
I think it was just color. I think it was just color when I started.
Do you know what is funny though? I've got to say the quality of the footage these days, and you do go back, people send you stuff online to say, oh, I remember this goal back in 2001, Bridgie, when you scored. And you look and you think, that seems like a really long time ago. And the footage is terrible. But back then when we watch Match of the Day, it looks so crystal clear. And I know I've got my glasses on nowadays, but it's incredible where we've come from. So it won't be black and white, but it will be blurry.
Yeah, I'm going to have a bit of fun with you guys. No, nonetheless, definitely, there's definitely a highlights reel there to be watched.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Guys, I want to move on to, you mentioned the young generation. Me and Bridgie were saying it was a weekend where your veterans around Europe, like your Zlatan Ibrahimovic's, your Lewandowski's, your Ronaldo's, your Cavani's, the veterans were stepping up. Also some young talent. And I want to talk about one man, Declan Rice, who put on a show for West Ham. They continue to impress everyone. They're equal points with City in third. Is he, and this is the question coming from Optus Sport, is he the most underrated player in the Premier League at the moment?
Oh, I don't think he's the most underrated, because anybody inside the game that understands the game and has played the game knows exactly that position is probably, it's the position that I would say is the most unsung position in football, if that makes it more correct. I had a guy at Sunderland with Tommy, Kevin Ball. Couldn't pass a ball to save his life, but he'd tackle, win the ball and give it to players that could do it. David Batty at Leeds United, unsung hero, actually won us so many games, broke down attacks. And obviously, Makaleli was the man that made that position famous. And I think Declan Rice is that kind of guy. Michael Carrick, another player that I felt didn't get enough recognition for the role that he did when he was so good at West Ham, went to Manchester United and was basically the mainstay on the team sheet every time. So Declan Rice will always be the first name on that team sheet wherever he plays, or whatever club he is at. I don't think he is underrated, mate. I think he's overlooked because of that position. But I dread to think what his price tag is, because the best thing for me is Newcastle United said they were looking at getting him. I don't care how much money they've got. He won't be going to Newcastle United. They'll have to look at somebody like it. And I don't want to say it, because obviously I do love him and I love him at Leeds United. You're looking more like a Calvin Phillips. That's who you could buy if you're going to Newcastle United. You can't get Declan Rice.
No.
Mate, he's amazing, and his stats show that. But again, I think it's the position that gets overlooked.
Yeah, but I also think, you know, now you're talking about Kevin Ball and David Batty, I think it's one of the positions that's probably moved on the most. You know, you're talking about, obviously, those players not be the greatest passers. They're just being a break of play. I think, you know, now you're seeing Kante, you see Jorginho, you've seen obviously Declan Rice.
Yeah.
You know, they've been so important, especially with this, you know, new attacking and more sort of open football with you need those players in the modern game. And the teams like Man United, who hasn't got those players, they're struggling. And again, West Ham, he's hugely important. And then he's got that, you know, what the old players have. He plays for the badge. You know, he's a culture maker. You know, he puts his foot in on top of having the technical and passing ability. We saw it obviously against Villa. You know, the pass for the first goal out to the wing, then obviously his strike for the second. You know, so he's a total player, and I just love his attitude. You know, he's the heart of that team, and again, it's going to cost a lot. But I would pay if I was United, I would, whatever you want, I'm going to pay it. We're going to put everything on it.
Claude, he would make a massive difference. The guy that he could actually emulate, and here's one for you. I know you love your Italian league, Pirlo.
Yeah.
He's got the passing range, he's got the engine, he shows he's got... I don't think he's as good a finisher as Pirlo, but I'll tell you what, man, everything that he does, and I think he breaks down attacks just as well. That, if I'm looking for somebody that I could say in that position that has got the quality, because I used to watch these YouTubers, I can't think what their names are, and they used to do techers, and they got Declan Rice on when he was, I think, 17 at West Ham, and they came off this YouTube, they did skills and tricks with Deckers, and they said, they actually nicknamed the whole show Techers with Deckers, because, and they said, I've never seen anybody that we have seen in the professional game with this much ability and skill, and that was credit itself, and he's just gone on to a whole new level, mate.
Yeah, Pirlo's
Did Pirlo ever tackle one? Did Pirlo ever make a tackle?
Well, he didn't need to.
I think there's a big difference there.
Juve always had the ball, mate.
Yeah. He had Gattuso next to him for years, which did that job for him, right? He didn't have to worry
about
it.
Got the balance right.
But Tommy, I wanted to ask you as well about Villa, because they lost 4-1 at home. They've averaged now in their last four games, they've averaged 3 goals conceded since they won at Old Trafford. They're only 3 points clear of relegation, your former club. And on paper, it looks like a very good side, despite losing Jack Grealish. What's going on there?
Well, I think they're just struggling all around of late. I think that game against Wolves hurt them a lot, confidence-wise. I think they've been leaking goals. You know, again, Tyrone Mings was obviously on the bench for the weekend. He's the captain. You know, they played with Tuan Sebe at the back, and obviously it was House and Konsa, and we know how that went with the sending off. So I think, you know, I think they're looking decent going forward. Ings is obviously was a massive miss for them. I think Bailey is a good player. Buendia, I think, you know, is still not hit probably the top level, but I think he's moving in the right direction. I think it's at the back. I think that, you know, Martinez, he has to do too much, and they're just leaking too many goals at wrong times. You know, again, we saw it against West Ham. You know, they're sitting too deep. They don't get pressure on the ball. If you look at both goals, I think the defenders could have done. First goal, he should have showed him down the line, not inside. Second goal, I think they're too passive. They give Declan Rice too much time. They're not closing him down. They've got plenty of people behind the ball, but you know, they're not aggressive enough. And I think it's costing them at the moment. We saw it against Wolves as well, that 3 goals late on.
Tommy, do you still speak to anybody at Aston Villa behind the scenes? Is there any coaches that are still there?
No, they've all changed. They've got a couple of masseurs and a doctor that's still there. You know, everything has changed. Well, even up the sort of leadership directors. It's a total change since I was there. Even player wise, there's not one player that I play with. So
well, the only I reason
still,
I asked,
I still speak to yeah.
The only reason I ask is because there was a big move in the summer from the coaching staff was John Terry defensively. I know he came in and he was getting ground. I didn't know if that had any effect with the coaching methods and why they were leaking so many more goals than what they had done last season. I didn't know how much of an impact or how much of a say John had with the back four or back five.
Yeah, but again, they've got a set piece coach now on top of it. Again, Ashley Young is there. He's come back.
Well, you said they've got a set piece coach. Is that what he's saying?
Every team's getting them these days, man. It's ridiculous.
Just for set pieces.
So coaches, managers, and coaches and assistants now don't know how to do set plays. So what they do, because they've never been in the game long, what they do, they give jobs to set play coaches. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. I never knew that was a thing. That seems very niche.
Yeah.
Hey, I tell you what, I can't think of the guy's name. I apologize profusely, but if you can get a chance to have a look for, he's not there anymore now. Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp employed him and he was a set play coach and he had about 30 to 40 different throwing mechanisms and triggers that Klopp wanted because he saw a throw-in as possession and ways to keep it. And they always look for the switch from Trent to Robertson to try and expose the opposition when they all got on at one side of the field. And he left Liverpool last season. He's done a 20-page document online somewhere. And now he's used as a consultant for other clubs around the world as set play coaches. So I don't know how that works, because if you're working for one club and you're telling the other club how their set players are working, that's cross conflict anyway. But the actual article, if you can find out who the guy was, I apologise, that worked for Liverpool, and it's an unbelievable read. And he gives figures and facts and figures. He's got diagrams up there, and he's got footage to show how we used to get Liverpool out of tight areas in the defensive third. Brilliant.
I wonder if that famous corner taken quickly was his, that was anything to do with his tactics, the one in the Champions League. But
definitely not, but he will claim it.
He'll claim it. That was just genius from Trent. Let's go to another big storyline from the weekend. This was City at home, and City have really looked like they went to another level after beating Chelsea. A lot of people saying they were the favourites now to go on and win the Premier League. A bit of a reality check, though, at home to Patrick Vieira's Crystal Palace. And we've been saying this was coming for Vieira's team because they were playing some very good football. They got good players. Conor Gallagher was in the mix of it once again. Tommy, what do you make of that? Is that just another speed bump in cities? Was it just an off day? Or does this emphasise why they need to get a striker? They held so much possession. They didn't create as many chances as they should, and they were punished down the other end.
You know, I think, again, yeah, potentially just translating all that possession into chances. I think, you know, I think Vieira has done a great job with Crystal Palace, first of all. I think they've defensively shored up. Some great moves with Anderson at the back, and obviously Conor Gallagher. I think it's been a massive boost for them in midfield. And then you've got the pace up front. And, Edouard, Saha, So you always, great on the counter attack. And I think that's always been Man City's, the way they play. It's always been their Achilles heel. Whenever they've lost, especially at home, it's been on the counter. And we saw, obviously, with Laporte being exposed and getting sent off. It's caused problems. And again, if they don't score, I think they had plenty of chances. But if they don't score, getting in front, it is an Achilles heel in these sort of games where the teams sit back and are just waiting for those, times when Man City lose the ball in exposed areas and fair play to Crystal Palace. So it is a bit of a worrying thing and a theme that sort of haunted them over the last couple of years. They've just lost too many points this way, and it's something they need to shore up.
Yeah, well, that result leaves Chelsea now 3 points clear of Liverpool as well, because Liverpool dropped points as well. So in the same weekend, you got Liverpool dropping points, Man City dropping points. Chelsea now have some daylight at the top of the league. They've only conceded 3 goals.
Claude, I remember having a chat with you, your team. I got you very excited about Chelsea. I said, this month is a huge month, because I saw the 5 fixtures that Chelsea had at the top of the table.
Yeah.
And I said, if you can capitalise on this window, this month, other clubs around you are going to slip up and cost you points. And was it the Juve loss?
Yeah.
When they had a couple of, and who else in the league, mate? Who was it in the league?
City.
I said they can bounce back off this no problem whatsoever, because other clubs will miss up, and Chelsea have gone about their business as they should have done, and it's panned out that way. So again, if they can just capitalise in this next game, Chelsea have got next week. I think they've got an easy tie against Burnley and then the Leicester City. Mate, it could be in a fantastic month for Tuchel.
Yeah, very much so. And that result has finished. Everton do lose to Wolves. So they are sitting at 10th spot, but it just does feel like Everton is losing to Everton, actually. It just feels like they're their own worst enemy at times. Looking at the table, Leeds got a much-needed win. They finally move out of that relegation zone. I wanted to ask you guys a question. We've seen the manager merry-go-round. Usually when one falls, the rest falls. Sisco went first at Watford. Nuno's gone next. It's ridiculous that we talk like this, but you have to in modern football. Who's next to go? Tommy.
If you talk about... I don't know if Farke is going at Norwich. I don't know if
no they're just chance. They're quite hang, happy with that. They go back to the Championship and then you get them promoted again.
Hang the boots there. I think Dean Smith could potentially be under a little bit of pressure at Villa if they don't turn around, shortly. I think he's been given a lot of money. He's been able to bring in a lot of players. So that is obviously Solskjaer. I think it's still under a bit of pressure. I know the result of the weekend has sort of eased it a bit, but he still needs to show continuously that he's the way forward. And he's, as I said earlier, I still think he's got issues. So I think potentially those are the two. I don't think anyone else is sort of short term. We saw Hasenhüttl, he's turning around a bit at Southampton. So, and again, that's more long term as well for them, at a, potentially a little bit like Norwich. So, Villa and still Solskjaer, I think.
You see what you've just said there about Hasenhüttl. This is what I really, really like about Southampton. They see the bigger picture. They have some dodgy results.
Yeah.
They see the bigger picture, the board and the director, because they see their manager, who is the head of their organisation, what he's doing with the first grade, what he's doing with the 23s, what he's doing with the academy. And everybody that I speak to back home that is involved in the game and is at academy level speak about the connection that Hasenhüttl has with the coaches at the academy level and the advice that he gives them. They see the bigger picture to their thing. And it's actually refreshing to see a club like that not just look at the top results, to see the whole the development that he's given them across the board.
It's frightening when you look around Europe, right? Because even we spoke about this one, Bridgie, Wolfsburg over in the Bundesliga. They started the season so well. 5 matches unbeaten, they were top of the league. They then lost 4 back-to-back games. It can happen, I guess. And they're juggling Champions League as well. They don't have the deepest squad. Mark van Bommel, who's pretty new to management, was sacked after those 4 games. So he was top of the league after 5. A month later, he's out of a job. Mm-hmm. This is just what we've come to expect now from modern football. But as a player, you guys have probably played in an era where it was maybe not quite like this. I wanted to get you...
Are you kidding? I was at Leeds United when we went through managers every week.
So it hasn't gotten worse. It's just always been like this.
Well, you know, it hasn't. No, certain clubs, I don't think it happens as often as it used to. Maybe I'm just losing my memory a little bit. I don't know. But the time we felt really, really together with Eddie Gray and David O'Leary that when they were there together. You know, we knew what was going on. We had a vision, we had a goal. And then obviously things went on off the field that didn't help Leeds United. David O'Leary had gone. Who came in there? Terry Venables came in. Mm. And I thought Terry was absolutely unbelievable. He gave us a whole new dynamics tactically, but couldn't get the project going quick enough. And then we went to Peter Reid. And then we went, and the lads, we were changing systems, we were changing formations, we were changing tactics. We were having to change the rules and regulations and the fines every time a new manager came in. They had their own ideas of what we allowed to do, what we won't. And it just became an absolute plight where you didn't know what you're doing from... You didn't have enough time to plan what you were going to do, to prepare, and it just became a shambles. And then it was Eddie Gray, then it was Kevin Blackwell. It was just a shambles. And this is what I'm saying. If it's going to be the merry-go-round about, the players just become uncertain. They're kind of like, oh, well, here we go. We lose a couple of games, we're going to get somebody else.
Yeah, you don't respect the manager, do you?
No, you don't. And you start to lose belief in your club. Mm. That's what you start to do. I fully believed Leeds United when I was there, when I signed. I turned down Tottenham because I didn't believe what they were all about, because at that time when I signed for Tottenham Hotspur, I was on my way. It was my club. But when I got down there, George Graham was the coach and George Graham was Mr. Arsenal. So that was a first little alarm bell. They'd been in. I'm thinking, how long have you really got? You've done great things at Arsenal, but you're manager of Tottenham now. The fans aren't going to really embrace it. There was just too many warning signs around what had happened. Alan Sugar came in and didn't really give me the full faith of what he was about. He was very rude and arrogant, to be honest with you. And I think we've all seen that on The Celebrity Apprentice when he does over here. He basically signed me but told us that he'd be sacking me pretty soon. So I got a really bad vibe. Went to Leeds United, they sold the vision. They had it in plan. I met the players, the young players. They said, this is what we've done. It was a fantastic time, apart from the injuries, but the club lost sight of the vision and the players and the managers. And then we did. We lost the belief. And that's what's happening with Tottenham Hotspur. And it can happen very, very easily when you start shredding managers left, right and centre.
Yeah, but I also think that, it's always alarm bells ring for me when you got a situation like Wolfsburg, when you got a situation like Tottenham, about, who's running the ship? Like, who's the leadership that has done, obviously, their due diligence on Van Bommel, young manager, great start, obviously hits a little bit of a bump. And then they sack him. I'm like, what was the plan in the first place?
Yeah.
I know there's expectations from the outside, but you know, surely you come in with a plan that you're going to back. You have a strategy. And sometimes I question these, you know, head of clubs that, you know, they'll make these rash decisions because what were your intentions in the first place?
Yeah. And do you know the other thing off the back of that, Tommy?
And we see with Arteta. Yeah, I think, you know, there was, you know, they could have sacked him. If they had buckled under pressure and not believed in the process, you know, he would have been gone 4 or 5 games ago. And you know, sometimes, you know, with Ella Ferguson is probably the best example of all, where he was so close to being fired and then where they ended up eventually. So, you know, it's that feel you got to have. And it puts a lot of emphasis on these club owners, because you got to understand what's going on behind the scenes. What is the feeling in the camp? What's going on the training field? You know, what's the connection between the managers and the players? And if that is still there, and if that core is working, a couple of bad results shouldn't change it. And sometimes you just feel there's a disconnect, and they just see the, you know, they hear what the press is saying, or probably what some fans are shouting in the stand, and then they just pull the trigger and sack the manager. And it's not always for the better.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that's the tug of war of modern football, really. It's, do you give it more time? Time is money as well. How much time is too much time? And no one really has the answers, I guess. And we'll see what happens with Tottenham now. Antonio Conte.
But Claude, next time Arteta's under the same amount of pressure and they lose a few games, he's been in that situation now. He will know how to resolve that situation or handle it better.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head, Bridgie. It's the fact that the players as well, when they know the manager's here, no matter what, they've got to get their finger out and get back to work. Whereas if you know that the manager could be going in the next few weeks, you might carry on just with the same energy, knowing he'll be out the door in a few weeks. Once the board come out and back the manager, he's staying no matter what. So you better get your act on, otherwise you're on the bench. And I think it's very important that the board does back the manager until the final day. I wanted to ask you guys one more question. Sorry, Tommy.
All right, so again, just a short add, because that all, you know, if you know that the board is looking to sack, I think there's always a dynamic in a changing room. The people who are on the fringe, who's probably not the favorite of the current manager, they will go into, they'll go into overdrive, you know, to create a bad vibe. You know, so it can then sort of turn the total opposite way, because they'll try to put a fork in the wheel of and get him out. So, you know, it's sort of it just strengthened the bad situation in the dressing room as well. So that's why the front that the club has with the manager, you know, that they stand by him, I think is so important, you know, going forward.
Times are changing. I just wanted to add a quick note on the fact that you had a few quotes come out midweek. Jose Mourinho, who's very vocal about what he thinks about the young players coming through, and whenever now he moves clubs and he's managing young players with social media, and they're out on the town wearing designer brands in their teenage years, and that their attitudes has changed. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic came out during the week, in a week where he scored a fantastic goal at 40 years of age. He came out and he made some interesting comments about Kylian Mbappe, and the fact that he needs to get a taste for blood, walk on fire, surround yourself with people that say you aren't good enough. You'll be better once you get out of your comfort zone. I wanted to get your opinion firstly on that, specifically Kylian Mbappe, Erling Haaland, these players, do they need to move on? Where do they go? And just the young generation at the moment, the money that some of these young players are on, so many of the, it's almost like football's at a crossroads now between two generations, the oldies, not oldies, but that previous generation, which look down and just say, there's no values, there's no hunger, there's no desire in these young players anymore. Do you see that?
No.
I think it's always been there. Like it was, the money wasn't the same when we were playing, but there was still players.
It was, Tommy, at a certain point, because it went ballistic in 99, 2000.
Yeah, but didn't you think still it would see get any the same further. Attitude. You still see, you know, we still saw players at that time that, you know, were happy with where they were and probably lost a bit of, you know, but I think it all comes back to what are your original goals? Because I think, you know, you look at Ronaldo, you look at Messi, and, you know, I don't know Mbappe personally, but to get to that level, you got to have a drive that's not about money. You got to have a drive about success, about personal improvement. And I think as long as you have that, if that's your core driving force, I don't think money will ever be a problem for you. But the problem is if you don't have that, if you then get swayed and probably have the wrong people around you, people who doesn't keep you focused, people that's going to drag you in the opposite direction, turn you towards commercial deals and doing all sorts of things, parties, fashion, and if you can't distract from that and keep those two things separate, I think you see players that's, they're great for a couple of years and then they just get sucked in or lose the desire because their original intentions were not true to football and to improving. And again, Mbappe, I think he's shown desire to go. He probably will go to Real Madrid to probably try to prove that, what Zlatan is sort of alluding to. But again, we got to know him as a person to sort of get a proper judgment on it. But he seems dedicated to me.
Yeah.
We can always do more, but...
What I took out of that, Tommy, you said something about the people that represent them and look after them. And I know that Alfie Haaland, who I played with at Leeds United, has a lot to do with his son. Has been his agent and looking after him and making sure that he's doing the right thing. And I think the biggest thing that they decided was one more year at Dortmund. Mm-hmm. One more year. But when he went to Dortmund and there was talk he could have gone anywhere else, they went to a club that played and would actually play to his style and his strengths. And that was counter-attacking football. That was, blistering pace. And Dortmund had that. And he's gone and excelled. And he's absolutely brilliant. He's had the right advice from that. I don't know who looks after Mbappe. But I think Haaland has got the mentality and the drive to go on and want to go to bigger and better clubs because he knows how it can help him. But I think he'd be managed very well behind the scenes from that and go to a club that suits him. Mbappe, I think if Zlatan's giving you a critique, Zlatan for me is the king and he's still doing it to this day. And if you want to take a leaf out of anybody's book, it should be out of Zlatan's because of the way he handles himself and looks after himself on and off the field. Whether you want to have that kind of arrogance about you and talk about you in a third party, that's the question mark for me. But listen, he thinks he's a liar and he can get on with it. I think Mbappe should move and I'd like to see him go to a tougher league because I just go back to my situation at Sunderland. I was playing second fiddle to Kevin Phillips and Niall Quinn. I was coming through. I was, I was educating myself. I was learning off these two guys. Quinny mentored me brilliantly off the field. And I admired what Kevin did in training, the way he could score goals at will. He was brilliant. But I had to wait for one of them to get injured so I could play. And it got to the point where you've been there 3 years, you're going, hang on, I've got a drive here. I want to be playing first team football. I know I'm ready now. And that was the opportunity when it came. Then I made a big decision not to sign a contract at Sunderland to see it out and force their hand to actually have to sell me. And I went to play with, no disrespect to the boys, better players, better younger players as well. And my football education knowledge went through the roof. I was not a Leeds United. I was definitely not a player that I thought would be a top three player or in a top three club in the Premier League. But when I went to play with them, I was way behind. I worked my arse off the field.
Like if we go back to Mbappe, I think you're playing in the French league. They're already 8 points out, 8 points clear after, after 12 games.
He's not challenging himself.
No. And you don't have to perform week in and week out. And like you say, Bridgie, you need to be somewhere with that pressure to perform, at the highest level because that's going to drive you as well. That's going to take you away from complacency because you have to do it. Where probably at PSG, you can get away with a few sort of half-hearted performances.
And Claude, you laugh. You mentioned social media, how the boys, Mourinho said, oh, the boys have all got social media. Well, I'll tell you what, me and Tommy went from having mobile phones that were like bricks to getting down to these little Nokia phones. And we had to deal with our media managers telling us, boys, you better be careful nowadays. There's phones have got cameras on.
Yeah.
Like cameras? Yeah, you better be careful.
All we could do was play Snake, Bridgie. That was all we could do.
I know, man. What a good game that was. But the cameras came out and they're like, we're warning you. And we were like, yeah, whatever. And I'll tell you what, there was a lot of players got caught out with kiss and tell stories because of these cameras. Mm. So the world is always evolving. It's evolving so quick these days that you've got to keep your foot on the accelerator. And I believe that Jose Mourinho's come out with a few comments saying the players have got these and they've got this. Man, that's the way the world is. If you tell a younger player nowadays that you cannot be on social media, you can't be on Instagram and doing this kind of stuff, you lose that player straight away. I think Mourinho has, he had an unbelievable spell as a coach and manager, and I respect everything he's done. I don't think he evolved with the generation and the times with the players off the field. And I don't think he understands that side of it. And I think that's why he can offside a lot of people and doesn't understand it and buy into it.
Yeah,
we've got to go with the times. We're dinosaurs, like you say, Claude. I'm getting older. We're dinosaurs, but I still try to get advice off you when you talk about TikTok. I speak to my kids about it because I know my players at Edgeworth Eagles are doing this. And I want to be on the front foot to understand what it's about and how I can help them and understand. So that makes me become a better coach and build a relationship with them.
And you can give them that guidance that they probably need because it's unknown territory. I see you with your fades. I see you with your haircuts now, Bridgie, mate. I know you're keeping up with the times. Looking sharp. Gentlemen, quick one, super quick one, because we're over time as we always are. But just wanted a quick word from you guys on the biggest game coming up this weekend, United up against City. All I want is a prediction on this one because I have my opinion. Tommy, prediction. What's going to happen?
Oh, it's going to be tight. Local derby. Like we've seen in the past, United, even when they've, you know, not played well, they've gone to City and won. And I think, you know, Solskjaer is going to play that same. I think he's going to stick with the three, the five, and be solid. And then again, try to expose Man City, you know, who's not going to change. Try to expose what Crystal Palace did, what Leicester's done in the past, what other teams have done. You know, do a little bit of the same job that as they did against Tottenham as well. So, I actually think United could win this one. So I'm going 1-0 United.
Wow.
Well, I'm looking at the last few results. City, United won the last one 2-0. It was a draw before that at Old Trafford. Then United again, 2-0 over City. United, what is it? They've won the last one, two, three. Won the last three matches and drawn. It's all in United's favour. I'm going to go totally against that here. And I'm going to say that Man City are going to annihilate them.
Really? Yep. It's almost because
that
lost
could be
this
the
weekend.
End. That could be the end of Solskjaer then. That could be the end. If they get another hiding, you know, where does he go then? You know, like... That,
what's your take, Claude? Because I'm obviously Tommy's going Man United, I'm going City, and I'm going City heavily.
I agree with you. I think City win this one. The reason is as well, I'd be worried if, knowing that City have lost last week 2-0 at home. Pep doesn't lose twice in a row, so I'd be worried. So I think he bounces back here. You're going to give me a number? How many goals, Bridgie?
I'm going to go for three plus.
Wow,
What a game, though! What a game.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic game. It's the early game as well coming up on Optus Sport, and there's plenty more coming up. Gentlemen, I'm going to let you go. It's Melbourne Cup Day, so wherever you are, enjoy yourselves. I know Bridget didn't come into the Optus office. He had some great excuses. We all know why he's not in today, but that's all good. Have fun, gentlemen. That's what it's all about. And thanks
for
joining
us. Any tips, Claude?
I've got no idea. I've got no idea, but we've got a few hours now. Tommy?
we might as well give the listeners person, something. Mate.
I think you're the best bet to come up with something. You know, you got connections, I know, in that business.
Well, you know, I've got a few, mate. Had a horse called Lifus, but no, I've honestly got no idea in the Melbourne Cup. I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to have a little flutter on the first five, and I'm going to box five randoms off and see if I can retire.
Enjoy yourself, Bridgie. I'm sure you have
Not from the Gagan part, though. Not from the Gagan.
No, never, mate. Because it's good. It's one time I get to catch up with you because you're always in blooming lockdown in Melbourne. So this is the only time we get to see each other. I'm just looking forward to the day we can do this live together once again, Tommy, mate. So listen, stay safe, enjoy. And it looks lovely weather down there, by the way.
Yeah, 30 degrees. So, you know, it's time to go to the beach, I think.
Enjoy, gents. Thanks for joining me. Cracking week of football. We've got Champions League as well to look forward to, so there's no rest for you guys. Early mornings all week. I'll catch you at the same time next week. And for everyone watching from home, thanks for joining us. Jump on the Optus Sport app for all the highlights, news, everything you'd ever need in the world of football, and we'll see you next week on the Gagan Pod.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.